Welcome to The Word for Today, featuring the Bible teaching of Pastor Chuck Smith of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California. Pastor Chuck is currently leading us on a verse-by-verse venture through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, we'll be continuing with God is a Righteous Judge, as we turn in our Bibles to the 50th Psalm, beginning with verse 10. And now, with today's message, here's Pastor Chuck Smith.
For every beast of the forest is mine, and the cattle on a thousand hills. God is saying, I'm not broke. I don't need your sacrifices. I'm not going to reprove you for your lack of sacrifices. My every beast of the field is mine, the cattle on a thousand hills. And I like this. God said, I know all the fowls of the mountains, and the wild beasts of the fields are mine. If I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you, or I wouldn't ask you for help. For the world is mine and the fullness thereof. I like that. God is not broke. He's not desperate. Will I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats? Offer to God thanksgiving. Pay your vows to the Most High. In the book of Hebrews, it says, wherefore, let us offer unto God the sacrifice of praise, the fruit of our lips unto the Lord. And this is a sacrifice that to God is well-pleasing. God is pleased with your just expressing your love, your praise, your thanksgiving to Him. Call upon me, the Lord said, in the day of trouble, I will deliver thee, and thou shalt glorify me. And that comes now to my estimation, one of the most truest forms of praise. It is that praise that rises spontaneously out of my heart as I see the grace of God manifested towards me. You know, I know that I really don't deserve it. And yet God is so good, and He answers prayer. And when that happens, I say, oh, thank you, Lord. You know, that's so glorious. I'm just overwhelmed with the grace of God. And it's just a spontaneous praise from my heart, which is really the purest form of praise. I have great difficulty with that concept of praise to get something. That's like flattering a person because you're trying to soften them up, you know, for a handout. And I find that a little difficult. You think you can snow God? You say, oh, God, you're beautiful and I love you. And because you're wanting God now to respond and to bless you. How true a praise is that? Is it a true praise to God, or is it just a desire for something for myself? The true praise is that which is spontaneous, just as I see God's goodness and God's love and God's answers to prayer. Call upon me, the Lord said, and I will answer on the day of trial. I will deliver thee, and you will glorify me. But unto the wicked, God saith, what hast thou to do to declare my statutes, that you should take my covenant in your mouth, seeing that you hate instruction and you cast my words behind you? There are people who just are totally opposed to the commandments, the statutes, and they disregard them completely. They hate instruction, God says. When you saw a thief, then you consented with him, and you've been a partaker with adulterers. To me, this is an interesting thing, and Paul brings it up in Romans chapter 1. He said, not only do they do those things that are worthy of death, but they take pleasure in those that do them. Here the Lord said, when you see the thief, you consent with him, and you are a partaker with the adulterer. The movie industry, in its portrayal of crime, in its portrayal of adultery. It is called entertainment. It is interesting to me, and I wonder just what kind of a person can be entertained by watching someone being blown away. Who can find entertainment in seeing a person in an adulterous affair? If you find pleasure in watching the crime, if you get some kind of a thrill out of seeing fornication or adultery portrayed, it's sort of like what Paul said, you take pleasure in those that do them. You find that pleasurable. And as the psalmist, or as God said, actually, you're actually consenting with them. You become a partaker vicariously in the adultery. Then you give your mouth to evil, and your tongue frames deceit. You sit and you speak against your brother, and you slander your own mother's son or your brother. These things you have done, and I kept silence. Now remember, God is not going to keep silence forever. God is going to come. He's going to judge, and he will not keep silence. Verse 3. But here God said, while you were doing these things, I kept silence. While things are happening today, God is keeping silent. And you thought that I was altogether one such as you. You thought that, and this is the serious mistake that people make on the silence of God. They misinterpret the silence of God as to blindness in some cases. God doesn't know who is God. In Psalm 73, they say God, you know, doesn't know. And so they misinterpret the silence of God as God not seeing or as God not caring. It doesn't really matter to God how I live. If God didn't like what I was doing, then why didn't he strike me dead or something? How is it that my life is still blessed? Is a wrong rationale for my evil deeds. And yet I've heard people say that. Well, God blesses our ministry. And if God wasn't pleased with our ministry, wasn't pleased with our lifestyle, then why would he bless our ministry? Worse, people misinterpret that as God consenting to what they're doing. And that's what God said here. You thought that I was altogether like you just because I kept silence. But he said, I will reprove you and I'll set things in order before your eyes. God will not be silent. His reproof and day of judgment is coming. Now consider this, you that forget God, lest I tear you in pieces and there is none to deliver you. For whoso offereth praise glorifies me. And to him that orders his manner of living aright will I show the salvation of God. So, quite a warning that God gives here as he speaks to, first of all, his people, and then to the sinner. Psalm 51 is to the chief musician, and it is entitled A Psalm of David when Nathan the prophet came to him after he had gone into Bathsheba. So we know the story, how that David in his older years was in battle and he sort of had a fainting spell, and it was quite obvious he didn't have the same punch that he once had. And the men said, hey, you know, you're not going to go into battle anymore. You're getting old, man. And, you know, you just don't have the same strength and all. And so it was determined that David should not go into battle anymore. And so his armies would go out, and David would remain in Jerusalem. And while the armies were out, and I believe it was the Amorites that they were fighting, that David, one evening on his housetop, And you'd have to really understand or see Jerusalem to really get the picture. And you that are there, you know how the city of David, Ophel, is right on the side of the mountain. If you've been to Jerome, Arizona, you get the same idea. You can throw a rock three blocks by just throwing it out because it's on a steep hillside and it'll land three blocks down because the streets are just, you know, back and forth. And it's just, Jerusalem was that way. The houses were just built on the hillside and they didn't have yards. But the roofs of the houses served as their yards. They were their patios. And David was there on the patio of the palace overlooking the city of Ophel. And other people would be out on their rooftops. And there was a lady nearby who was bathing. And David saw her and he lusted after her. And he sent his servants over to invite her to the palace. And there David entered into an adulterous relationship with Bathsheba. He tried to cover the guilt by ordering her husband home, hoping that the husband would spend the night with his wife and think that he was the cause of her pregnancy. But the husband didn't cooperate, and so David conspired to put him to death. And the husband was killed in battle as a result of David's orders to Joab, his general. David then took Bathsheba as his wife and thought that his tracks were covered. Nobody knew. But the prophet Nathan came to David one day and said, David, there was a very wealthy man in your kingdom, had an abundance of flocks. All that he could desire, he had everything. Next to him, there lived a very poor man who had only one ewe lamb, and it was like a child that would eat at his table and sleep in the house. All he had. And the rich man had guests who came, and he ordered his servants to, by force, go next door and take that one little lamb from his neighbor and kill it to feed his guest. And David became angry, and he said, that man shall surely be put to death. He pronounced his judgment, and Nathan pointed the finger and said, David, you are the man. God gave to you the kingdom. He gave you the riches and the glory of the kingdom. He gave you many wives and all, and you went and you took the wife of your neighbor. And so this is the psalm that follows that rebuke of Nathan. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according to the multitude of thy tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. David's prayer and cry for mercy. He has been found out. God is put the finger on him through the prophet, so to speak. And David is now calling out for God's mercy. There were other psalms where David said, Lord, reward me according to my goodness and my uprightness and so forth, but not now. He's not asking for justice. Mercy, O God. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity. Now, notice transgressions. Blot out my transgressions. The transgression is a deliberate, willful act of disobedience, and David's act was a willful act of disobedience. He knew better. He knew the law of God. He knew he was doing wrong when he engaged in that adulterous affair with Bathsheba. It was a transgression. Blot out, he said, my transgression. Wash me from my iniquity. Now, iniquity is just sort of a sum total of the evil in my life. And cleanse me from my sin. Sin is has as its root meaning the missing of the mark. It may not always be deliberate. Many times it's just the weakness of our flesh. still sin, is still missing the mark, but it isn't a deliberate, willful thing like a transgression. I would like to hit the mark. I would like to be all that God would have me to be, but I come short. I miss the mark. And so wash me or cleanse me from my sins. And so often David ties the three together, the transgression, the sin, the iniquity. For I acknowledge my transgressions. I confess them. I acknowledge them. And my sin is ever before me. It was troubling his conscience. He couldn't get it off of his mind. It was one of those things that just plagues you. You're drawn. Your flesh is drawing you. And yet the spirit is saying no, no, no. And thus this conflict, this inner warfare, as the flesh is lusting against the spirit and the spirit against the flesh, and the two of them are contrary. And you find yourself torn, ripped apart inside, the feeling and the consciousness of guilt. It's ever before me. It's there. David said, against thee, and thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight. Interesting to me, because as I would look at the story, I'd say, well, he really sinned against Bathsheba, inviting her to his palace and, you know, using his influence and all to seduce her. I would say that he sinned surely against her husband, who he sent to his death in battle. But in reality, all sin is against God. When I sin against God. It may have its effect upon other people, and often does. But the sin is against God. He is the one who has set the righteous standard, and any sin is against God. So David acknowledged it's against thee. When you sin, you are going against God. And we need to realize that. I may think, hey, man, you deserve to be cut down. You've cut down enough other people, you know. And I may sort of gloat in the possibility of being able to cut you short, to take advantage of you, because I know what a scoundrel you are. But I'm really sinning against God. It is God's law that is being violated. And so David declared, against thee, and thee only have I sinned. And I've done this evil in thy sight. You don't hide it from God. He thought he had hidden it. He thought that nobody knew. But God, you knew. I have done it in your sight. You were watching me. And I really feel that we need to have that consciousness of the presence of God with us at all times. I think it would alter our behavior if we only realized that the Lord was right there with us. We forget that. We sort of shove it out of our minds. I've had people embarrassed because they were using filthy language and they turned around and saw me standing there. Nope, you know, and they blush and they feel embarrassed. And yet they don't realize that the Lord is there. I did this, Lord, in your sight. You were watching me. That you may be justified when you speak and clear when you judge. It is interesting to me how that man so often seeks to challenge the justice of God. So many questions relate to, is God really fair? That is something that Satan has done from the beginning. Challenges the justice or the fairness of God. Is God fair to you, Eve? In forbidding you to eat that luscious-looking fruit, he really isn't fair, Eve, because he knows that when you eat it, you're going to be just as wise as he is. And he's trying to keep that from happening. He's holding back from you something that would put you on a par with him. And he's just trying to protect his own territory, Eve. That really isn't fair. And the idea was, God isn't fair withholding from you something that is so beautiful and desirable. So Satan continues to challenge the justice of God, but when God does judge, he will be justified in doing whatever he does. As we said, during the midst of the judgment, the declarations of holy and true and righteous are his judgments.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse venture through the Bible in our next lesson, as we follow the prayer of repentance. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. But right now, I'd like to remind you that if you missed any part of today's message, or perhaps you'd like to order a copy for that special friend or loved one, you can do so by simply contacting one of our customer service representatives, and they'd be more than happy to assist you with the ordering details. Simply call 1-800-272-WORD. And phone orders can be taken Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, our toll-free number is 1-800-272-9673. And for your added convenience, you can order online anytime when you go to thewordfortoday.org. And while you're there, be sure to browse through the additional resources that include Bible studies, commentaries, CDs, DVDs, and so much more. Once again, that's The Word for Today online at thewordfortoday.org. And for those of you who still prefer to write, you can use our mailing address, which is The Word for Today, P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. And be sure to include the call letters of this station with your correspondence. And now, on behalf of The Word for Today, we'd like to thank all of you who share in supporting this ministry with your prayers and financial support. And be sure to join us again next time as Pastor Chuck Smith continues his verse-by-verse venture through the Psalms. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. Now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck Smith with today's closing comments.
May the Lord bless you and keep his hand upon your life as you walk in fellowship with him. May you be strengthened day by day by the work of his Spirit within your life. And may you begin to experience his victories, his power over sin. May the love of Christ and the peace of God and the communion of the Holy Spirit rest and abide with all of you while we are absent from each other. And may God draw us together again that we might grow in our knowledge and understanding of his love and grace through Jesus Christ.
Life was easy for Charles Tex Watson, but it didn't feel complete. Something or someone was missing. So Tex looked to fill his emptiness, and his search led him right into the arms of Charles Manson, forever linking him with one of the most gruesome and cold-blooded crimes in history. The Word for Today presents the DVD, The Power of Forgiveness, The Tex Watson Story. Watch and listen to Pastor Chuck as he interviews Susan LaBerge, the daughter of murdered victim Rosemary LaBianca, who was killed by Tex Watson. And when Susan came to Christ, she knew she had to forgive everyone in her life, and that included Tex. See how this dramatic story of God's mercy and forgiveness will challenge you to forgive the unforgivable. For more information on how you can order the Power of Forgiveness DVD, please call The Word for Today at 1-800-272-9673 or visit us online at thewordfortoday.org.
This program has been sponsored by The Word for Today in Costa Mesa, California.